All right, back on the Young Turks, Cenk and Anna with you guys. Anna, sorry I ran a little long there, and sorry to you guys because I had to cut the two Russian stories. And look, we try to give you all the stories of the day, it doesn't fit. So we do our best. We do our best to try to get to all the interesting and important stories. So let me get to a couple of tweets from you guys. RP17 says, or Seventine, as a Londoner, the best way to fight terrorism is to make democracy stronger, to join people in empathy. That's what ISIS lacks. Exactly right, RP. Thank you. Kiki Wellington says, politicians aren't about to give up money from their sugar daddies. I'd say Coke won. Yes, and they're going to apparently reconsider the bill tomorrow in the House, and that'll be very interesting to see what happens here, because Trump has put himself in what appears to be an unwinnable situation. It's nearly impossible to get the conservative Republicans and the so-called moderate Republicans to agree. Mm-hmm. It's even harder to get any Democrats to vote with you on at least this issue on health care. And so either you're going to be a failure and not going to be able to make a deal like you said you would and get rid of Obamacare like you said you would, or even worse yet politically for you, you actually do, and then people are decimated by it and you'll be grotesquely unpopular.
Right, yeah. So the whole Coke situation is also interesting because on one hand, politicians who vote in favor of the current proposal for the replacement would lose that money, right, if they voted in favor of it. And then those who don't vote in favor of it and they craft legislation that the Koch brothers would like would get destroyed by their constituents, right?
Yes.
Oh, it's great. This is wonderful. It's and all over wonderful when you really think about what the consequences could be for these politicians.
And by the way, the Koch brothers, again, they're like the dwarves that released the Balrog. Their own greed is what destroys them. You're about to get a $600 billion tax break, but they're like, no, it's not enough.
It's insane.
So at the end of the day, they probably won't get a deal. And since they don't get a deal, then they don't get a tax break. Great, all right, ruin it, you dumbasses.
Yeah.
Melissa M. Miller says, and politicians like to pretend money doesn't corrupt our government. So brazen and disgusting. How has our democracy fallen so far? By the way, look, we've been talking a lot about our journalism drive and Justice Democrats. But don't forget, Wolfpack's fighting to actually regain democracy. And the way you do that is you get money out of politics. And the only way to do it is to get an amendment. Wolf-pack.com. I'm going to tell you more about that fight next week, because unfortunately, there's a lot of people who don't want that change, and they're not just right wingers. So there's a lot of drama there.
Yeah.
All right. Finally, I want to thank all the people who've donated to the journalism drive. Like I said, there's a little over a month left. Let's get it done. Let's get to 2 million. And if you like the people we hired, show us, right? So, and thank you to everyone who has. $50 from Lisa in Maryland, $100 from Eduardo in Illinois, $685 from Cole in California. Okay? And there we are, 1.510. I can see the light at the end of the tunnel, guys. I can see the goal line there. So, if we get to 2 million, we hire more guys for you. And remember, 127 gets you a t-shirt, 270 gets you the soundboard as well. And if you guys want, it's just a fun part of what we do. $5,000 gets one of these cameras named after you. The desk is $10,000, gets named after you. And we go to the Stephen Perillo conference room every single day. That was from a donor that helped build this studio. The cameras are named now, the chairs are named. So you can be part of that as well. All right, what's next, Anna?
All right. About a month ago, there were a number of bomb threats made to Jewish community centers here in the United States. Now, it turns out that Israeli authorities have arrested a 19-year-old suspect who not only made those bomb threats to Jewish community centers here in the US, but also to other countries as well. Now, this is a 19-year-old Jewish Israeli American citizen. So he has dual citizenship, and he was arrested while he was in Israel. Police believe the man, 19, carried out fake bomb threats in New Zealand, Australia, and against scores of Jewish institutions across the United States. He also allegedly called in fake bomb threats to two Delta flights at New York City's John F. Kennedy International Airport in 2015. Now, interestingly enough, he was deemed mentally incompetent, or at least not mentally stable enough to join the Israeli military. Most people in Israel have to join the military, and they decided against him joining because of his mental instability.
So it's an interesting situation. and we do have this for in some folks, right? So he's smart enough to figure out how to camouflage his voice. In fact, it took investigators in the US, the FBI, and Israeli police a long time to figure out who he was, because he was so good at masking the IP addresses from which the threats were coming.
So he had some sort of device that would allow him to post things and search for things and basically be active on the internet with different IP addresses, which made it really difficult for police to track him down. So, I mean, to say he's mentally unstable is one thing, and incompetent is a completely different thing. So I should be clear about that. They deemed him unstable, so it doesn't mean that he's, you know, not smart enough to do these types of things.
Yeah, and so that could obviously coexist, and it has apparently in this case. And his defense attorneys are now saying, hey, he should be hospitalized rather than have a trial. We'll have to see about that. Right now, the Israelis are likely to try him. We don't know if the US or any of the other countries involved are going to try to extradite him. Great job for the authorities solving the case. We have no idea, other than his mental instability, what motivated him to do this. Like a lot of unstable 19-year-olds, it was probably to try to get attention in his own way, or to feel some sort of glory, and they all have different ways of exhibiting that. And so far, no idea about what his politics were.
We don't even know what his name is. They're not releasing his exact identity until he appears in his next trial date. But I also want to be clear about something. So there were the threats that were made at these Jewish community centers or toward them. And then there were a number of cases where cemeteries were vandalized. As many as 3 cemeteries here in the US, Jewish cemeteries were vandalized. We still do not know who those vandals are.
Yeah, so that's exactly why false alarms like this are so damaging. What I was gonna say is, I don't know what his motivations were. I don't know if it was to blame others for it, whether it's right wingers or Muslims. I have no idea. We have no idea. The kid's mentally unstable, right? Or it might have been just to evoke sympathy for fellow Jews, right? Mm-hmm. Again, we don't know. But if that was your intention, it has the exact opposite consequence, right? Mm-hmm. Because what it does is it allows people who already want to dismiss those attacks to go, oh, why, we knew it. It's just them doing it themselves to try to get attention. And there's no real anti-Semitism. No, but those cemetery attacks happened here in the US. That kid's in Israel. He didn't do those, let alone the shootings at the Holocaust museums, at the Jewish community centers in Kansas, and all those things. So if he thought it was to help whatever cause he had in his head, it did the exact opposite. It unfortunately allows people to say that it's no big deal and it's not real, when in fact a lot of it is very real and sometimes deadly.
Right, exactly. I mean, this goes way further than political motives or, you know, the perception that people might have when it comes to these threats. When these threats are made, they should be taken seriously, because we don't know whether or not they're serious threats or if it's just some crazy person doing this for attention or whatever his motive is, right? So I don't want to create an environment, or no one should create an environment, where these threats aren't taken seriously. And I don't want it to turn into a boy who cried wolf situation. And unfortunately, if we have more people like this doing stuff like this, I think people won't take actual threats seriously, and they should.
Make sure, and every group says this, don't let your guard down, and there's real threats out there, and make sure that we address them. And again, credit to the authorities for catching them.
Absolutely. All right, moving on. There is a story circulating around the internet involving a case that Neil Gorsuch heard and was actually the only dissenting judge in the case, involving a truck driver who was fired because he abandoned the load that he was driving in Illinois. Now, this case is really interesting because it shows the type of thought process Neil Gorsuch has when he's ruling on cases, and how he wants to apply the exact literal wording of the laws that pertain to various cases. So this case has to do with a truck driver. His name was Alphonse Madden. And apparently he was driving a truck in rural Illinois in very, very cold temperatures, and he was running out of gas. And so he was communicating with his employers about the fact that he was about to run out of gas, and they gave him this muddled message about where he can refuel. And so, long story short, his truck stops working. It stops running. And he finds himself stranded in rural Illinois with the temperature at negative 27 degrees Fahrenheit. Okay. So at that point, Trans Am told him, like, you got to stick around. In about an hour, somebody will be there to help you out. Although no one ended up showing up in the hour that they told him that someone would show up. So with the temperature outside an Arctic level, negative 27 degrees Fahrenheit, the brakes on the 50-plus foot trailer froze in the locked-on position. Madden radioed in and was told to expect a repairman within the hour.
So I just want to explain one part of the story that's important and not so clear. There's a truck and then there's a cabin, and you could actually separate the two. So the brakes on the truck are frozen. So if he tries to go out on the road, it'll be super dangerous to drive with the brakes basically being broken. And he has to go really, really slow because the brakes are on the whole time.
Right.
So they're telling him either drive the truck or just wait there for someone to come out and repair it. Now, if the cabin heat is working, maybe he could pull that off. But that leads to the next part of the story.
Right, exactly. So he essentially like bundled up and waited for the repairman. Repairman didn't show within the hour. When he woke up, he realized that his body was blue. He couldn't feel his feet and he was starting to panic because he realized that he was in a dangerous situation. He realized he couldn't wait any longer. So at that point, let's go to graphic 10. According to The Guardian, he unhitched the cab from the trailer and despite being low on fuel, managed to drive it to a gas station a few miles away. Then within 15 to 30 minutes, returned to find a repairman finally on the scene. After repairs, he delivered the meat. So the meat was abandoned for a short period of time so he could go refuel and come back. When he came back, the repairman was there. Everything was fine, right? And so he used human judgment, which I think most people would use in a situation like that to save their own lives. Well, the company that he was working for, Trans Am, decided to fire him, and this case went to court.
So before we get to how the judges decided and how Gorsuch decided, one more important thing you really need to know, the heat in the cabin was not working. So when he checked the temperature gauge within the cabin, 3 hours later, he waited longer than the hour, he waited 3 hours. Within the car, it was negative 14 degrees. He couldn't feel his feet, and when he called one of his friends, he was mumbling his speech, which meant that he might have had hypothermia. He's got to get out of there, he might die. But Gorsuch thinks, no, if a company has given you an order, you follow it.
That's
right. It doesn't matter.
That's right. So he's very pro-business, and so this is the case that keeps coming up when it comes to why he shouldn't be confirmed as the next Supreme Court justice to replace Antonin Scalia. So through a series of rulings in Madden's favor, which the company Trans Am challenged, his case ended up before Gorsuch and two other federal appeals court judges on the powerful 10th Circuit. Now, while Madden had largely won because he was deemed justified in putting his safety above the company's instructions, Gorsuch disagreed because the law states that it protects someone refusing to operate their truck, whereas Madden had in effect refused not to operate it. So that shows you the specificity that Gorsuch focuses on when it comes to making these rulings. Forget human judgment, forget the fact that there was a human life on the line here, forget the fact that the law, according to all these other judges, could apply in this individual's defense. But Gorsuch is like, no, I'm gonna interpret this very literally and I'm gonna rule pro-business. And that's exactly what happened in this case.
You know, I think people are being way, way too kind to Gorsuch on this, even his critics are, and I'm gonna explain why in a second. Mm-hmm. But again, more context. Through the 7 years that this court case took, it went through several different courts and seven different judges. Every other judge said, oh, he's clearly right, and the law does apply to him. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of different reasons why you can rule that way. They can say, okay, first of all, you could argue that he didn't operate the truck part. Okay, then it's totally technically within the definition of the law. Mm-hmm. Okay, you could argue that no, the law was written slightly wrong, but it's okay because the Department of Labor, which has jurisdiction, has the ability to interpret that law. so that it is not interpreted in an absurd fashion, which would allow which would force this guy to either die or be fired, which is a very normal legal doctrine. It's called the Chevron doctrine. Gorsuch says, no, no, I will not allow the Department of Labor to make any reasonable conclusions. If a law is written unclearly, it must be enforced unclearly and unreasonably. But why? The Department of Labor can actually interpret it, and every other judge is saying they should. He's like, no, I will not let them do that. Now, the reason why I say that they're being too kind to Gorsuch, they point all that out. But I want someone out there to find one case where Gorsuch said, I will enforce the law letter by letter if it went in favor of a human being and
over
not a
business.
Corporation. Oh, I want to see him rule against the corporation because, hey, the law is the law. He almost never does. I would argue he never does. I haven't, to be fair, I haven't read every single one of his
rulings,
but he's now had these hearings. The Republicans have had every opportunity. He has had every opportunity to say, look, no, you guys are totally wrong. Here's a case where I ruled against corporations because of the letter of the law. And he doesn't do that. He has an overwhelming record of somehow always finding a legal reason to rule in favor of the corporations and against actual human beings. And these are the same conservative judges who have the audacity to say corporations are people. So corporations are people so much that they could kill other actual human beings, and Gorsuch would let them get away with it.
So when Alphonse Madden got fired, and this case, by the way, took 7 years because of all the appeals and everything, it was like a death sentence for his career. First of all, he had only been a truck driver for 3 years because he was a graphic designer. And then after the recession, work dried up. So he's like, I got to do anything I can do, right? And so he started driving trucks, and that was his only means of making money. And so after he got fired, and it showed that he had abandoned the product that he was supposed to drive wherever he was supposed to drive it, people wouldn't hire him. So he was living in poverty as a result of all that. But all of this doesn't matter. Look, my point is, I can't stand things like zero tolerance policies, right? Mm-hmm. Where people in power, authorities, administrators, whatever it is, people who have positions of power refuse to use human judgment that makes sense, apply human judgment to various cases. If you don't want to apply human judgment, then you shouldn't be a judge.
So there's three layers of culpability here. First is, let's think about how monstrous this company Trans Am is. That they told that guy, I don't care if you can't feel your feet. I don't care if it's negative 27 degrees outside, negative 14 degrees in the truck. I don't care if you're going to die. Don't leave the product because it might cost me an extra couple of bucks. Now, I can tell you, I'm a small business owner. If one of you guys called me and said, I'm about to die, and I said, I don't care. Can you imagine what kind of a monster does that, right? But we've gotten so used to it from big business. Why do you think big business is the only thing polling worse than big media and politicians? And all those guys in the media, they never talk against big business because they're owned by big business, right? But we all in our lives have seen big business crush us. So what does the Chamber of Commerce say? They said that Gorsuch's ruling in this case and overall his selection was, quote, fantastic. Because Chamber of Commerce represents giant multinational corporations. And they don't give a damn about your life. They don't care if you have a decent wage. In fact, they want to pay you as little as possible. And they want to grind you down to the very last ability to survive so they can make an extra buck. Because we've created these public corporations whose only directive is maximize profit and don't care about anything else. Then guys like Gorsuch claim that they're people and have constitutional rights, and that their rights supersede our rights when we're actual American citizens.
You know, there was one thing that really stood out to me in this ruling, and it was how Gorsuch, who thinks of corporations as people, referred to the truck driver in this case, to Alphonse Madden. Alphonse Madden said, let's go to graphic 14. I noticed what I noticed was that in his opening reference, he simply called me a trucker and didn't use my name.
So look, the other judges humanize him, use his name. But to Gorsuch, he's just a clog in the machine. And by the way, this is the third level of culpability, and it goes directly to Gorsuch. You think he didn't know what he was doing when he ruled against every other judge who'd seen this case? This was him planting his flag saying, I will be more draconian pro-business than any other judge out there. So Trump or any other Republican, pick me, because I will serve the corporate interest better than anyone. When Al Franken asked about him, and you got to give credit to Al Franken on the questioning here, on this particular issue, he said, look, I just want to know, what would you have done if you were the Alfonso Bad? He refused to answer it three different times. And Franken's like, look, I want to be clear. I think it does relate to your ruling, because you need to use judgment and you need to interpret the law in a way that is rational and not irrational, not absurd. But even putting aside your legal position in this case, I'm curious, what would you have done if you were him? And he's like, I can't say. And Franken was like, what do you mean you can't say? Would you have frozen, risked freezing to death or getting fired? And he's like, well, I might sympathize. What do you mean you might sympathize with him? What do you mean you don't know? And now Franken said, what do you mean you don't know? You thought about this case and you claim you're such a brilliant jurist that spent a lot of time on this. You don't know what you would have done if you were him? That's Gorsuch basically telling the Republicans, don't worry, I will never side on behalf of the small guy. I will always be on the side of corporations and use any technical legal reason, and then have that smug look on his face. Oh, please, I'm an originalist. By the way, the founding fathers were not originalists. They said that you should, that it is a living document, that every generation, Thomas Jefferson said, every generation has the right to interpret it in the way that they think. And so his reality is, he doesn't care about that guy. He cares about his own personal advancement. He can't put himself in the in his shoes because he's a conservative. He lacks all empathy. He thinks, well, I do declare, I went to law school with Obama, and that's why the Democrats don't even mind me that much. And they all get paid by their corporate donors too. So I never would be a trucker. You shouldn't have let the corporations crush you. Yeah, it's your fault, not mine.
It's the inability to empathize and put yourself in that individual's shoes. So that's a huge problem with politics in general right now. But one other thing that I wanted to add, I actually want to call myself out, because I made a horrible, horrible mistake when we originally started covering Gorsuch. I drank the media Kool-Aid and I was like, oh, he's not so bad, right? And so I don't want other people to fall victim to that. I should have been better. I remember that, you know, the first time John and I talked about Gorsuch, I was like, oh, he doesn't sound that bad. He's actually educated. And I, you know, read all the glowing reviews about him in the mainstream media. And that was my mistake. He, at least when it comes to cases like this, is a deplorable human being.
But, and by the way, so that's really important that Anna said that, because not because of her situation, but because almost the entirety of the mainstream media is on Gorsuch's side. Now, the reason they give you is, hey, he can speak in complete sentences. At least he's not a buffoon like Donald Trump.
Right.
That is a very, very low bar, but that's not the real reason. The real reason is they're also controlled by giant multinational corporations. Now, they don't know that. There's no smoke-filled room where they launch a conspiracy, okay? But they are hired to like guys like Gorsuch. If you were a person who talked about big business being a problem, you don't get hired in mainstream media. Giant multi-billion dollar companies don't hire you to talk against multi-billion dollar companies. So then the Morning Joe crew, for example, who's now attacking Donald Trump every day because the establishment doesn't like Trump for a lot of good reasons and some illegitimate reasons, then find a guy like this and, oh, the establishment loves Gorsuch. He puts a gentle, eloquent face to a really dark, ugly
world
that is ruled by these robots that we have created. We are in that science fiction movie where the robots have taken over. They're legal robots called public corporations. And now they rule us, and they get their henchmen like Gorsuch to come in and set the rules, set the law, so that we can never win. You either die or you get fired. But the corporation always wins because Gorsuch helps them find a way to win in either case.
All right, keep going.
Yes.
All right. Experian compiled data on its hundreds of millions of dollars. Let me start that again. Experian has compiled data on hundreds of millions of consumers, and they found that the average American actually dies with $62,000 in debt. Now, the numbers are pretty devastating. 73% of consumers had outstanding 73% of consumers had outstanding debt when they were reported as dead. Also, those consumers carried an average total balance of $61,554, including mortgage debt. But even without home loans, the average balance was $12,875, which is insane. So I thought this story was telling and incredibly important because it really gives you a sense of how the American dream is so out of reach for so many people. And this notion that, you know, if you work hard enough and you have a good job and you can take out a mortgage, or if you qualify for a mortgage, one day you'll own a home. But a lot of people die not even paying off their homes, right? So you never really own that home. And I think that's so interesting and so devastating.
Honestly, this whole obsession America has with home ownership is preposterous. Even if you paid off the whole mortgage, you still have to pay taxes on it.
Yeah.
And if you don't pay the taxes every single year, they'll take your home away. You never really own anything.
So, but here's the thing, Cenk. So for a long time, and you guys know I'm very transparent about how obsessed I am with real estate and all that stuff, at least with the market. For me, back in the day, it was about like, oh, I want to work really hard and I want to own a big home. And it was more of like wanting the luxury of it all, right? But now, at least for me, my perception has changed, because now, since I'm renting and probably will for a very long time, and you see how rent prices go up so rapidly, homeownership is more about stability at this point, right? Knowing that you're not going to have to worry about your rent going up, you know, $300 out of nowhere, right? And so I'm lucky I'm in a rent-controlled building, but a lot of people aren't. So if you're living in a big metropolitan area and you do so because that's where you work and that's where your life is, and you're renting, well, there's a certain risk to that.
Look, there's upsides and downsides to this story. The downside is, as we're about to explain, if you die and they can actually reclaim the debt by taking your home, for example,
yes.
Well, that's disastrous for your family. On the other hand, if they have nothing to reclaim and you died, well, sad day for them. You got one over them. You took the money out and they can't recover it. I kind of like that.
No, I know. But most people don't benefit from that, because most people do have an estate. Most people do have a family that either, you know, lives in the home that they took the mortgage out in, or owes creditors. And so those creditors go after what little you have left for your family, right? And so that's a nightmare and that's a disaster. But I want to kind of break things down a little further to give you some more data on what's happening with Americans. So about 68% had credit card balances. Okay, so the vast majority of people had credit card balances when they died. The next most common kind of debt was mortgage debt. 37% of these people died still owing money to their home loans, followed by auto loans, 25%, personal loans, 12%, and student loans at 6%. So that's what's going on. By the way, student loans were about, on average, $27,000.
Yeah, I actually think the other debt, other than the home debt, was more surprising. That mm-hmm. So, okay, yeah, a lot of people have mortgages and they die before they pay off their mortgage. I'm not as shocked or annoyed by that as you are. But
because you don't ever own the home. You don't ever own it.
So what? So what?
It's never yours. It's never yours.
I know. We all die and we never own anything. You wake up. You're all going to die one day. You don't own a goddamn thing. Okay? We're all renting everything that we have. Like, you're not going to own these clothes. You're not going to own your car. You're not going to own a goddamn thing when you die. Okay? Let it go. Everybody's so obsessed with ownership.
No, but owning a home or owning property is important for a lot of people, because you pass that down to your family, right? And so, yeah, they might owe property taxes.
Nobody does that anymore. Of course, some do, but it's a really old school traditional way of thinking. I'm going to pass my farm down to my son and then his son and their daughter.
Yeah. I think that's your, I think
anyway,
that's
but overall,
your perception from your bubble. I'm just keeping it real.
I think it's your bubble, okay?
No, I think a lot
because
of
because you're so obsessed with home ownership.
It's not just home ownership, Cenk. I'm obsessed with the idea of people, you know, feeling comfortable, you know, I don't know. I don't know how to explain it, but there's a lot of pride that people have knowing that when they pass, their families will be taken care of. I think a lot of people think that way.
I think that we're in a situation that's so disastrous that people are going to feel that at least they got one over on people if they died with debt. Okay, so now I'm telling you. So look, let me just break it down real quick for you guys. Yes, if you got a home, they can then take that home from your family when you die if you've got debt to, in order to repay that. Now, if they keep paying the mortgage and they can pay back your personal debt too, they're going to be okay, right? But if they can't, they'll take the home, and that's disastrous, okay? So that beloved home that you cared about is actually an albatross around their neck. Okay, but if you died with a whole bunch of debt and there ain't nothing to take, sad day for the credit card companies. So look, I don't want you to stiff them. I think that's a bad idea, but I'm not going to shed a tear either, because at least they can't go after your family for personal stuff if you have no assets when you die. So if you went out in a blaze of glory and borrowed a whole bunch of money and then you died, it's not going to bother your family members if there's no assets. So, and by the way, you think they won't change that? Soon they'll try to change that, because and they're already doing it. Private student loans, they say, oh, I can go after your family if you haven't paid back all your student loans. And in fact, there's now some stories, a young guy dies as he still had student loans, and their parents are grieving, they go after them and go, give me the money, give me the money.
No, like, the more you talk, the angrier I get, Jake, okay? Why are we living in a country that's literally the wealthiest country in the world, produces more than any country in the world, and people can't live? Like, they're not making enough money that they have to take out all these loans and live off credit cards and shit. No, you should be angry about this.
I am. Randomly are debating and arguing about is that I don't think it's that big a deal to own a home. Okay, like, I think that America obsesses about that, and sometimes it creates real estate bubbles.
Why do you own
which
a
then
home?
Crash, which then have other issues.
But why do you own a
it's
home?
It's just an economic decision. I rented for most of my life. So, and at the time, people were like, you gotta own a home, you gotta own a home. No, I didn't. I rented and it was fine. And by the way, if I think it's, it makes more sense economically to rent, I'll go back to renting. It is not a thing that is a psychic benefit. You don't actually own the goddamn thing. You know who owns my home? I don't fucking own it. The bank owns it. Okay? So am I ever going to pay off my mortgage? I'll give you the answer. Fuck no. I mean, if I sell it and it's not underwater, then I can pay them back. But I'm never going to pay off that fucking mortgage. We live in LA. You don't own the goddamn thing. Just get beyond it. Who gives a shit? So that's where you and I disagree. Because we're told every day, both in your case because of traditional family and also by American media, own a home, own a home. If you don't own a home, you're shit, right? Who gives a fuck? Rent or own, depending on what your economic situation is. Okay, that was weird debate. I don't know why we got emotional about that.
I don't know, I didn't see it coming.
Yeah, neither did I.
But I want to own a home one day. Just keep it at 100.
Okay.
Like, I want to, like, you know, maybe I want to build a fucking fort in the backyard, right? I can't build a fucking fort right now,
right? Like, I gotta
hit up my landlord and be like, can I please paint the wall? Can I put up a picture? Like, I want to live. I want to paint the walls.
Okay, that's fine. It's your personal preference.
You gotta keep living, man.
When you own the home, it's actually much worse. Yeah, you can paint the wall, and it's gonna cost you. Oh shit, your water heater just broke. Now that's gonna cost you.
Yeah, that's true. I don't like that.
Okay, and now your landlord pays for all that shit. Yeah. Now when you own it, you're screwed. Jesus, real quick.
Well, I think with, like, I'm a homeowner, but there's a certain upside to being a homeowner. I mean, I know what Jenk is coming. I hear both of you. I mean, once you have a home, that opens you up to other opportunities because you have investment somewhere. So if you want, you have a financial asset that you could leverage. You feel me? So that opens you up to other things. So I leverage. Get what Anna's saying, but Jake's also like, I get it, but you're also overstating it. I feel like assets. There is value to having home ownership. I don't want to just overlook it because it does set you up.
Value.
So it does have some value.
Maybe Jesus is smarter with his home ownership than I am.
He's it's just because look, for us, it was something that it was our first time. Like, we didn't come from having somebody, our parents. So yeah, now I have something set up for my kid.
See, people care about that.
I have asset to offer. I get Jenks devaluing it in a sense, but like, to some immigrants who that is the thing that you do have, and it's slightly available. Like, Nobody would offer me that kind of loan anywhere else, but I leverage now that I have equity and stuff like that. Now that opens me up to a Schwab account, you know, which normally it never opened it to me.
Yeah, you feel me? Yeah, I know, I hear you on the Schwab situation. No, it's true, and it does give you a little bit of an economic leg up. So there are some literal economic advantages to it.
Yeah.
But in terms of, dude, you're not going to pass that down to your son. No. You're going to be on to 7 different homes by that time.
Let's hope so.
I mean, come on. Anyway, all right, we got to go, guys. Yeah. We got to go. All right, look, I actually, can we do another?
No, I want to do more stories. Are you crazy?
Okay, let's take a quick break. We're going to come back and do more stories.
Okay.
All right, I partly took the break so we could see whose side you guys were on.
Oh, no.
Riley Grady writes, I'm from Montana. The property matters out here. I own acres of farmland, 4 generations in our name. Kind of matters.
Kind of matters.
Score one for Anna. Vance Miller, having something to pass on to your heir is a matter of personal pride. Knowing you could do some good even after you died. Score 2 for Anna. And we're done. 2-0. Anna wins. Okay, because tweets, of course, decide everything.
Everything.
$10 from Jeanette in Oregon for the tytnetwork.com/go. $50 from Robert in Pennsylvania. $127 from Julef in Hawaii. Every time I do your names and your states, I want to go to those states. Oh, Hawaii, Oregon, Pennsylvania. I love every one of those.
I just want to make one analogy, which I don't know. It's not even that brilliant, but I think it.
Are we going back to the house?
Just real quick. Oh, I see America as a pie, right?
Oh,
and we all deserve at least a sliver of that pie. But at this point, if you're not like in the 1%, you don't even get a sliver of that pie. You get like the tin container that they bake that shit in. And it makes me angry, right? It doesn't matter how hard you work. Doesn't matter how educated you are. Doesn't matter if you bust your ass. If you're not willing to, you know, find employment in a career that like robs people, then you're screwed. Like that's the way I feel. And it makes me angry.
Okay, I'm going to leave it alone.
Okay.
And our members of the day are Jairo Gomez and Shane Lindsay. So thank you guys. And of course, membership gets you the whole show, so you could replay that debate over and over again, and the post game. And tonight, Aggressive Progressive with Jimmy Dore and Steve O. TYTnetwork.com/join to become a member. Go ahead, Anna.
All right. Spring breakers are now thinking it's a good idea to abuse sea creatures just so they can get drunk. And it's being posted on social media, which is pretty much a terrible, terrible thing to do. So Total Frat Move has an Instagram page. And of course, it has a bunch of posts showing the expected behavior of spring breakers, drinking, partying, having a good time, which is fine. But then you also come across clips like this. Oh. Hate human beings. Okay, let's take a look at another one.
Hey, don't touch
me. No! Don't fucking kill me right now.
Ow! It squirted.
How'd you get it?
Oh, and then one more.
Go, go, go. Ew.
Ew. Yes.
You know what this makes me think of? You know, every year Fox News usually likes to do like segments where they're talking about spring breakers and how terrible they are. But what they focus on is how slutty they think the women are, right? Oh, look at them, they're so slutty. And they'll show the women in the bikinis over and over again because they love it. But they never focus on the actual bad behavior of spring breakers. I don't care about the salacious stuff. I don't care if you're hooking up. I don't care if you're drinking and partying and having a good time. God bless you, have fun. But just don't abuse animals in the process. Like, oh my God, why? Why?
Well, here's what I think, Anna.
Animals are innocent.
They are. Like that poor bird. Did you see that bird?
Yeah, look,
I think if you're going to go in the direction that I think you're going to go in, just save yourself the hassle and don't.
Okay, so we just did a story earlier this week about how the guys in Cancun were chanting more frat guys, build out wall, mm-hmm. right? See, I think that's much worse. And so for frat dudes, you really have to have a spectrum of crappy stuff that they do. And I don't mean just frat guys. And I know I was a young guy, and young guys do stupid stuff. And you think it's cool, and you think it's funny, and all your bros think it's funny. So we want to encourage them to do the right stuff without being, I think, overly parenty. Like tut tut tut.
It's
right?
overly parenty to say, hey, don't abuse animals and, you know, have a good time otherwise.
Yeah, no, I know. But like I think going to Mexico and insulting everyone in Mexico, because like you're a bro, I showed them on a cruise ship as you're yelling at Mexicans, that's actual human beings. I think that's a lot worse than drinking a beer out of a starfish. I don't know what a starfish feels.
Yeah,
I do know.
Animals are innocent.
Okay, but is it like, and he didn't like, to me there was a line that was not necessarily crossed, and you guys are going to totally disagree with me. Mm-hmm. The shark thing might have crossed it, but he did eventually release the bird. Like if he had like snapped a bird's neck, I would be like, oh god damn, what did you do? Why did you do that? Why did you think that was funny? That's terrible, right? But he captured the bird for a little bit, they all left, and they were all drunk, and then they let him go. There's worse things in the world.
I don't know. I just didn't expect you to compare the Mexico chant thing to this. I think that they're both bad, right? Is insulting humans a little worse? Yeah, maybe. But I mean, it's just so unnecessary to go to a beautiful place and mess with living things just for your entertainment, you know? And look, I think part of it is, when you're in college and when you're at that age, everything is about you, and you honestly don't see the impact of your bad behavior, right? And they're probably super drunk and they don't even realize how bad they're acting or badly they're acting. But no, this is unacceptable behavior. Again, I don't care if you're partying and you freaking drink till you get alcohol poisoning and have sex with like 50 different people, you know, in the same weekend. Don't care at all. That's your life. But when you're harming other living things, that's when I care.
Yeah, I guess I'm trying to walk the line of encouraging people to do the right thing, not the wrong thing, but at the same time not being overly judgmental. I did stupid stuff when I was young, and young people do stupid stuff. What we're trying to say is, don't do it in a way that hurts other creatures, and especially humans. But I don't want to be too parenty and be like, oh my god, you guys. Blah, blah, blah. I mean, look, when I played rugby, I didn't do it, but others did anal boot chugs.
Yeah, I don't give a shit about that, right? So you want to do anal boot chugs, do you, boo, right? Okay. Those are two consenting adults who are behaving in a questionable way, but consenting adults. In this case, innocent animals.
Animals are innocent.
Okay. And you're harming them or abusing them for your own entertainment, right? You think it's cute. In fact, people think it's so cute that they're willingly posting it on social media. So
I hear you. Yeah. I hear you. More about the anal boot chug stories in my rugby days at the post came for members only at tytnetwork.com/join.
All right. I'm skipping again ahead to privacy issues.
Go.
Okay. The Senate has just voted to reverse landmark rules covering you and internet privacy. Now, these were rules that were implemented by the FCC last year that would allow you to feel a little more at ease regarding the type of searches that you're doing and the type of data that internet service providers compile about you. So internet service providers obviously want to collect your data and use it for advertisers and even to potentially sell it to third parties. The FCC realized that this is a little problematic, and so they implemented rules to kind of protect your privacy. But Republicans in Congress don't like those rules, and so as a result, the Senate has just reversed them. So the rules, which prohibit providers from abusing the data they gather on their customers as they browse the web on cell phones and computers, were approved last year over objections from Republicans who argued the regulations went too far. So U.S. senators voted 50-48 to approve a joint resolution from Senator Jeff Flake that would prevent the FCC's privacy rules from going into effect. The resolution also would bar the FCC from ever enacting similar consumer protections. It now heads to the House.
Great. So if you wanted your privacy invaded as a libertarian, congratulations, mission accomplished. Because I hear a lot of libertarians voted for Trump thinking that that he was for civil liberties, then he would protect your freedoms. If you smoke marijuana, he's coming after you full force. His attorney general says that they're going to enforce federal laws against smoking marijuana to the hilt. And the list goes on and on. Now add this. So you wanted your privacy online? Sorry, not going to get it because corporations could make an extra buck off of it. And they were donors to Trump and you weren't. So sad day. And go ahead.
Also, another thing to keep in mind, Washington Post reports, let's go to graphic 27, that in February, President Trump's FCC chairman put a hold on a slice of the rules that would have forced internet providers to better safeguard their customer data from hackers.
Yeah.
Now, as we all know, that is an ever-growing problem with the internet, an ever-growing problem of hackers managing to obtain our credit card information and that type of stuff. But hey, you know, who cares about that? Who cares about consumer protection? The Trump administration is in power right now. Republicans are in power right now. And they're so incredibly pro-business that they would rather side with internet service providers as opposed to you and, you know, your privacy rights.
And they always hide behind small business. None of this helps small business. They're in favor of giant business, big business. The internet service providers are about as large a company as you could find in the world. So they ain't got nothing to do with small business. So, and if they can make an extra buck by making their security a little less, then they're gonna make an extra buck. And if it means a hacker gets your private information, yeah, so what? Hey, you shouldn't have taken that naked picture. If you're a girl or if you're a guy, you sent that over. Well, we get to show it to your employers. Once the hacker gets it, they could bribe you with it. They could do anything they want. Look, so a lot of people have gotten used to that their information is going to get taken and marketed to others. And it does happen all over the internet. Now, it was nice to have some protections gone. They're gone. Because there's no protection for actual human beings under Republican administrations, only for corporations. But the gratuitously allowing them to lower security and have hackers have better access, that is, I think that's a bridge too far that even Republicans and libertarians are going to go, well, what the hell did you do that for? They did that because they don't give a damn about you. When is it going to go through your thick skull? Because a lot of people still don't get it because the mainstream media doesn't tell them. The Republicans work for big business, period, period. And if you think Trump wasn't a standard Republican, you got another thought coming to you. Mm-hmm. He's wallowed in that swamp. He doesn't want to drain the swamp. He loves the swamp.
He is the swamp. He is the swamp. He's the same type of person who exploited a corrupt political system so he wouldn't have to pay his fair share of taxes. He is the swamp. He loves the system. What would make anyone think that he's going to look out for the little guy? I don't get it. He has a $100 million pad in New York City. Okay? He has like a gold, he had a gold carriage for what's the little boy's name?
Barron,
yeah, for Barron Trump. He had a fucking gold carriage, okay? Yeah, he cares about the little guy.
He named his son after power barons, robber barons. He named the kid Barron. Anyway, it's not the kid's fault, you know, nothing against the kid.
Of course
but
not.
Trump named a kid after robber barons. He thought he was for you? Oh God, anyway, all right, we're way out of time. We do have a post game about anal boot checks.
And
there's another story we were going to fight over. Maybe we should fight over it in the post game.
Yes.
More drama.
Let's do that. Come on.
TYTnetwork.com/join to become a member. Get the post games. Bye-bye.